Welcome to the P3 Pilates Progressions Program, brought to you by Personalized Pilates. If you would like more information about the whole P3 program, please visit www.personalizedpilates.com. I'm Katrina Foe, your host for tonight. I'm a second-generation Pilates master teacher trainer, and I'm here to answer all your Pilates and anatomy questions so that you can take your Pilates teaching to the next level.
Welcome. Tonight we are going to talk about a whole bunch of different things. I've got lots of questions that you guys have sent in. One of the major things I see a theme of is shoulders. So we're going to dive into some of the shoulder neck complex issues. And remember, if you want to talk on the radio show and go back and forth with me live, tonight we do have a live show, so you are more than welcome to do that. The number is 347-838-9945, or as many of our P3 students prefer to send your questions in, just send it to my email, katrina@personalizedpilates.com, and we will get to your questions as soon as we can. So I am going to go ahead and jump in and get started then for tonight. All right, so this question comes from one of our students. She wrote, "Hi, Katrina. I've been reading a few articles lately about pec minor. Am I correct that it's the muscle that pulls the shoulders forward when it's tight? What I've heard is that this muscle needs to be released / lengthened before you try to strengthen the back muscles to correct that part of your posture. What are your thoughts on this?" Okay, so I have lots of thoughts on this. I'm going to give you guys some background anatomy for those of you maybe that aren't super brushed up on your pec minor and all. Pec minor is found underneath the pec major, so it's just a little tiny guy, as the name minor suggests, and it goes from the third, fourth, fifth ribs around that area, and it goes over and to the side to attach the coracoid process of the scapula. So it goes right from the ribs to the scapula. And functionality-wise, it's major claim to fame, so to speak, is to help stabilize the scapula. It also can depress the protract the scapula, and it can help downwardly rotate it. So if the scapula is fixed, so not moving, pec minor can also help elevate the rib cage and bring the rib cage up to the scapula. And so that's a little different scenario depending on the position you're in when your arm/scapula is not moving and the rest of your body is. It can help with that. So it's got a lot of things that it does, so to speak. And it does make a huge difference how your pec minor is doing. And it's a huge player when it comes to having good or bad posture. I would say this is one of the key factors, so to speak, in having like a kyphotic type posture or just that whole neck shoulder complex issues in terms of just making it, you know, general, but there's a lot of specific things that can go wrong that we're going to talk about. So in terms of the good and bad posture, when pec minor contributes to the bad posture, his role tends to play into the protraction of the scapula and the rotating it kind of like forward over the rib cage, so it kind of pulls it forward, and everybody knows this posture. It's that kind of teenager supermodel schlump, you know, where they kind of roll their shoulder forward and everything. So don't emulate that in the supermodels, right? So because of this, there's some common injuries that tend to happen. So when pec minor is short and tight and kind of encourages that rolling forward, it can actually pinch some of the veins and arteries and nerves and stuff that go through that subacromial space, so the space right under the acromial process. So in this condition, if you don't have enough space below that subacromial arch, okay, so that, if for those of you that don't remember, in your anatomy, the rotator cuff, the top muscle that runs in that supraspinous fossa of the scapula, the right above the spine of the scapula, and it runs through that hole to then roll over and attach to the top of the humerus. So that hole is what we're talking about, that arch. When there's not enough space underneath that, it causes the tendons and everything, particularly supraspinatus, that muscle that runs through there, and also the bursa in there, can get pinched or impinged, fancy talk. Anytime that your arm, usually anytime it goes over the head. So what the problem is in that rotation element. And you've probably heard me talk about this before, because this is really common and it's a really big problem. And I'm going to talk about some ways you can work on this and help this. But it's huge. It's so huge. And there are so many people that have problems bringing their arm overhead. And a lot of them, you'll see this, they have pain and they just avoid the area. You know, not bringing your arm overhead, super, super common with women, especially, 50s, 60s and such. But then you also have people that are like in their 20s, no problems, no pain, but they subconsciously know that that's not a good spot for them because they cheat when they're doing their movement. And those of you that have worked with me personally, like in live person, you know that I get really on this because it drives me nuts. You see people that are doing Pilates and they're totally cheating and they're missing this range of motion. And I think that a lot of it has to do with trying to avoid actually opening up the pec minor and opening up and using certain muscles. In particular, we're going to talk about serratus anterior and such, to get the full range of motion. So some of that's because they're tight, like in pec minor. Some of it's because they're weak, like in serratus anterior. And there's other fun friends that play into this. I wouldn't say party. It's the word opposite of party, a problem. Problem. Okay, so along with increased pinching possibility, a tight pec minor and also probably weak serratus anterior causes the glenoid fossa, so the little socket that your arm bone sits in, to become more vertical in its alignment. So this increases the abduction, rotation, and winging of the scapula. So all that to say, what's happening is it's causing bad alignment. Okay, it's causing the alignment not to be ideal, so that the arm bone does not sit in the glenoid fossa right. And then you've got compensating factors. So you've got the levator scapulae and the upper trap, which is running down the back of your neck into that top of the shoulder. So you know when you get a massage, those are the guys everyone goes for first, right, in the shoulders. Those guys will be increased activation. So they're going to be turned on and kind of like permanent lockdown, hard as rocks kind of a thing. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to kind of counterbalance and pull the shoulder back onto the back, for lack of a better word, to maintain that glenohumeral stability. So the shoulder socket stability of the arm bone staying in the socket, which is kind of important. And all of that is going to result in having a tight neck and shoulders, because which is what you see all the time. Like everybody that's on a computer, people are just tense running around with their shoulders up in their ears. And I mean, how often do you see people, the clients that are just, permanently wearing their shoulders as earrings, I joke. And this is what a lot of times is going on behind the scenes. And so we're kind of stripping it down backwards and what's going on. So when you have all these things resulting, not only do you have this tight neck stuff, but you're also going to be putting a lot of extra pressure on the rotator cuff itself. So there's those four muscles, supraspinatus, subscapularis, infraspinatus, and teres minor, that are, their job is to kind of, I just love that sound, suction cup the arm bone, that humerus, into the glenoid fossa and keep it in there. Okay, so that's kind of its secret mission in life that is not listed on a lot of anatomy charts and stuff as, I mean, how do you put that? It's not like an action. It's just it helps maintain that stability of keeping the arm bone in the socket. And that's, to me, one of its most important features. It's not rotation like the term rotator cuff suggests. Not even all of them do rotation. So it's really more about that stability. So again, we've got levator scapula and upper trap trying to oppose all this tight pec stuff, pec minor specifically, and it's just all sorts of messed up stuff. And so a lot of times pec minor is also responsible for a lot of the what they call thoracic outlet syndrome, TOS is the acronym, which is sometimes called pec minor syndrome, go figure. This is just the compression of nerves and blood vessels in the front of the chest and front of the shoulder. Okay, so specifically, if you want to get technical, the brachial plexus and subclavian artery and vein. And this is, if you want to make an analogy, this is real similar to like a sciatica that happens in the hip, but it's up in the shoulder. So you've got this pinchy shooting stuff, and it can vary depending on exactly what's going on with the person and how much is being pinched, just like sciatica can vary. But again, this is a muscle balancing issue. We've got to get the muscles in the shoulder balanced. So I'm going to take a little time and kind of go over how to exactly do that. And this is a long process, so please, if you're an instructor and you see some of these signs that I'm talking about or hear some of these, ooh, I've heard people talking about pinched, you know, this or that and stuff, you know, watch for this, but don't beat yourself up because it kind of takes a while to unravel all this. You've got very complex patterns going on here, and you just need to give yourself a little grace. So first off, I just want to remind you that the bony structure in the shoulder girdle is much, much more unstable than the pelvic structure. So first off, just the fact that your pelvis is several bones that are fused together after birth versus the shoulder girdle complex, you know, you've got your clavicle and your scapula and everything, they're not fused together. They're all separate, and there is some movement, hopefully not much. Then you've got the difference between the thigh bone sitting in the socket where the socket of the hip is pushing down on it. Okay, so the acetabulum is sitting on top of it, and gravity is helping you the majority of the time when you're standing up to keep that socket together versus the glenoid fossa is on top of the humerus, but the humerus is just dangling from it. Gravity is actually working against it to pull it out of the socket. So you've got the musculature having to work way harder to do its job of holding that socket together and not having your arm just fall off. Obviously, it wouldn't actually fall off. Your skin would hold it there and stuff too, but you get the idea that it's working against, not with. And so there are a lot of differences. Now, and the reason I point that out is because when you're thinking about the shoulder, the beauty of it is that it is more mobile. So these things that apparently look like negatives in the shoulder really are good things because you can move your arm around a lot more. There's a lot more mobility at the shoulder socket, or should be, than at the hip socket. So, I mean, unless you're a prima ballerina with, like, you know, no ligaments and really shallow hip sockets and such like that, you should have a lot more mobility, like not even comparable, in your shoulder socket. And that's a good thing. We want to have more mobility, but there is a price, which is the less stability. So all that to say is that we need to be extra careful as Pilates practitioners to make sure that our clients are doing really good alignment in their shoulders, because even just a slight degree off, you're training bad habits and you're contributing to the muscle imbalances. So I'm going to say that again because this is really, really huge. Even if their alignment is slightly off, if you're practicing that, not only in the Pilates studio, but that's where you live on a daily basis, you know, walking around town and stuff, you are training bad habits and contributing to potential future injuries. So we really want to watch this. And I don't mean to say this like where people get too OCD and crazy on their clients about it and like make them so they can't even move because they're so paranoid about making alignment perfect. I don't mean for you to go there, so don't be that person. But I say that to give you a proper fear and respect for how much power you have. Most instructors, from my experience, are much better at seeing poor alignment down in the lower body. And they're just kind of this vague, like, I'm not sure if what I'm seeing is correct in the shoulder. So I just want to go back to, like, if you're looking at somebody from the side, if they're standing up straight, their ear should be over the center of their shoulder. Okay, just next time you have a client in front of you, look at them from the side when they don't think you're looking. Just, you know, have them stand there and just kind of walk to the side like you're pretending to grab some paper or a pad or something, you know, and just look. Because very, very rarely will you find somebody who their ear is actually over the shoulder. Now, it could be that their head's jutting forward or they're super kyphotic or, like in this case, their shoulder blades rolling over the front of the rib cage or, you know, whatever, but it's not usually like that. And that's what we want to be looking at and really working on. So this is about shoulder alignment, but it's not just shoulder alignment. It's also neck alignment. And it's all so enveloped. Like we just talked about how the levator scapula and upper trap is, you know, compensating. So again, it just pulls the neck right into this confusing mess and takes its toll on it. And the neck is so precarious or just delicate that we need to really guard it by making sure that our shoulders are doing what they're supposed to. Okay, so that's your anatomy background and stuff. So hopefully that made sense. You can rewind it. Isn't that great? And listen to it again if it didn't. And if it doesn't make sense, please send me an email and say, could you expand on this or this didn't make sense to me or whatever. Okay, so if your pec minor is tight, what you want to do is work on opening it up. Now, there are different philosophies in terms of the order of how you progress, in terms of do you just focus on opening pec minor up and then you work on strengthening the upper back to keep, you know, the correct shoulder alignment and all that stuff, or can you work on both of them at the same time, or do you do the back first or whatever? I would tend to say that within the session, I would like to do both and work on both, but I know that I'm not going to get true results until my pec minor is opened up. I mean, I'm not going to change the actual alignment of day-to-day life, which is what I care about, until pec minor starts to open up. So I can strengthen the back, but it's not going to be profound and life-altering and where they stop feeling shooting pain and tingling down the arms and numbness and all these fun nervy symptoms that you get when you pinch nerves. Nerves are very loud and quick to scream at you if you do things that are not good for them. So respect the pain, use the pain, and enjoy the fact that they have pain to tell you what's going on, pros and cons. So in terms of stretching out and opening up pec minor, you've got two ways of approaching it, and I've talked to you guys about this before, but the first is to do what we call passive stretching, and this is what most people focus on, where you just open up, pull the origin away from an insertion, wait 30 seconds to a minute, try to let it release, and all that kind of stuff. I personally feel that that is not a very effective method in terms of actually creating different muscle lengths. And meaning that in daily life, you're seeing a change. A lot of times it'll elicit soreness, which people equate with changing their body and doing something good. But usually the soreness is like it's an injury phase where your body's saying, let me go, and it goes right back. It stays there. So what I recommend is a more active approach, which is usually what we do in Pilates anyways, where you're actually using the muscle in a lengthened position. So you're working it eccentrically and you're training it to be open and that's a safe position. Not that you have to overcome the stretch reflex and trick it into opening up, because it's not going to be tricked in daily life all the time. You want to teach it that it is safe to open up and it's not going to be hurt and that it can build strength in that open position. So with that, You can do passive stretches, like where you put your hand, you stand in the middle of the doorway, you put your hand, one hand on either side of the door frame, and then you lean into the doorway and just kind of hang out there and open that up. And that's going to get pec major as well as some pec minor and stuff. And it's harder to really differentiate the two. But again, it's right up in that, well, for my family, it's a tickle spot. My daughter is extremely ticklish. Right kind of to the side of the armpit, right under the clavicle, right where your pec minor is. That's where you're getting it the most. And depending on where you're tightest, you're going to find it. And depending on how high or low you have your hands, you can adjust it to get more into different angles of pec major or pec minor and stuff like that. That'd be more of a passive stretch. Again, my preference is going to be more of an active stretch. So some things, some examples would be like if you lie on a foam roller so that it's under your spine, you can let your chest open up. And again, this would be kind of a passive-y stretch to start with, and a lot of people will just stop there. And this just feels amazing for some people. Or you're just letting your arms flop on the floor, and because you're up about, I think it's like 6 inches diameter, you're getting some nice gravity opening you up, stretch in the front of the chest. Okay, and again, you're getting pec minor and pec major, all sorts of good stuff. Not a bad thing, but I'm going to make it a little more active. So in this position, do your angel arms. So your movement principle exercise, angel arms. Just take your hands, palm up, starting at your hips, and run them right along the sides of your body on the floor if you can, as if you're making a snow angel. Go figure, there's the name. All the way overhead if they can tolerate it. And you want to have the shoulder blades rotate up, which is a really huge thing for this type of person. So if they can't do that without pain, which there's a very good chance they can't if they're really getting some impingement stuff, just go as far as is comfortable. And you can, if you're comfortable with this, you can manually put your hand on their shoulder blade and encourage their shoulder blade to rotate upwardly more. And the humerus should rotate in that glenoid fossa. So there should be rotation both at the glenoid humeral joint and shoulder blade on the ribcage joint. And that can assist them in finding that without pinching. But again, proceed carefully there. If you know what you're doing and if they're not in too much pain, talk to your client, all that kind of stuff, because you could really, really irritate them and really annoy that if you do too much there. Okay, so that's a great thing to do, and you can just go back and forth and do the angel arms. So they're working on, this is ideal, so it's not that they're going to get here, but especially if somebody's having a hard time with this, you're encouraging them to think of their hand, the back of their hand, being on the floor the entire time. Now, again, this is a perfect world we're talking about, and these clients are not perfect. This is why they're here to see you and why you're giving them this exercise. Ideally, when somebody's, somebody would also be able to keep their bra hook on the foam roller the whole time. So this person, meaning this is not an ideal person, they've got a tightness that you've seen and you want to work on it. Usually as their arm goes overhead, their bra hook pops off the roller, which means their lowest ribs pop forward. They call them rib poppers a lot of times in the Pilates world. It just goes crazy. What it is extension in those lower thoracic, mid-thoracic area. It's not actually anything to do with their ribs. It's their vertebrae that are extending inappropriately to allow a little bit more movement in the shoulder. So that means that once you hit that, what you can do is say, okay, can you keep your bra hook on? Because sometimes they just didn't know that they were supposed to. And then if they can't, that means that's probably where you should stop, because in terms of range of motion of the arms, because they're capped out. They need to stop there, and they're cheating now to get farther, and there's no point in cheating. Cheating's not helping them get more out of it, so that's the place to end. Okay, but again, check and see if maybe they just didn't know their bra hook was supposed to stay down, and that seems silly to us because, you know, we're Pilates instructors, but they don't necessarily know that. So that's one thing. There's tons of Pilates exercises that are really great for working on this. Let's see. One of my favorite is chest expansion. As the name suggests, you got to love it when the name tells you what it's doing or what it's supposed to be for, right? It is about expanding the chest. Now, I will be the first one to say that most people well, I don't know if most, a lot of teachers kind of miss the fact that the name is chest expansion, and they're just like cueing all this tricep stuff and everything, and it's really not about that. And the beauty of chest expansion is that you get the head turn thing, and if they can't turn their head loose and free, it's a good sign that your levator and upper trap is kind of locked down and impeding it, which shows you that probably your chest, meaning your pec minor in particular, is not really open. So there's a purpose to that head turn. And I say that jokingly because I remember very clearly when I was first in training, and I kind of like forgot that there was a head turn for several months. And I don't know, I took a lesson or something and somebody was like cueing that. I'm like, oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that. But there is a purpose to it, and it's very important. It's a great little way for you as a teacher to kind of gauge and see what's going on with that. And one of my favorite cues, which you might have heard in the iPilates, is that, you know, where your bra strap should lie, or, you know, tank top strap or something, you want to try to stretch that area open. And right where it lies is right over pec minor for most women, unless you got some weird tank top on. So what I'm really trying to do is say, stretch open pec minor. And this is, of course, an active way to stretch it because you're opening it and working it eccentrically on that. So that's one example. And I bring all this active versus passive stretching up because the question was whether this muscle pec minor needs to be released and lengthened before you strengthen the back muscles. It's all one thing. And this is where people get very, like, chopped up, and they look at one piece and one muscle, and what is that one muscle or one thing doing, and it's separate from the rest of the body. Remember, go back to like how the muscles work. When, like, say we're talking about a joint that's a little simple, like your knee joint. It straightens, it bends, right? So if your hamstrings bend the knee, then at the same time, any time you use your hamstrings to bend your knee, your quads, the ones that extend your knee, are lengthening. They're eccentrically working. They will always work in opposition to each other. So if you know it's opposing muscles and work the opposing muscles, shorten concentrically, then the opposing muscle will work eccentrically, which is what I'm talking about with active stretching. So it's the same thing. So if you work it together, you will get multitasking both at the same time. Okay, and to me, that's just working smarter. it takes a lot of extra work out of the equation, and you can just focus on good things. So just look at exercises that you are good at cueing and that your client can do well enough to be working in a correct alignment. Okay, so that qualification will throw a lot of exercises out specific to your client. So that's why it's really hard for me to say, this is the right exercise to do for this, because it's different for everybody. And somebody that's good at chest expansion may not be good at something else, and vice versa. So part of it's going to be your cueing and how clear it is in your body and your head and how clear it comes out of your mouth. And then part of it is going to be how well they can actually accomplish it. And again, there's so many factors. So things like pulling straps. Pulling straps is a really great exercise that you can work on this. Again, it's pretty much the same exercise as chest expansion. You just have a different orientation of gravity. So think about that for a second. It's the exact same exercise. You're just parallel to the floor instead of perpendicular to the floor. So there's a little different orientation of gravity, which changes the angle of force physics-wise on it, which we won't get into, but it's nice to have the variety, and this is what really helps your body get used to lots of different situations and be ready for anything. One of the beautiful things of Pilates. Okay, so pulling straps. Most instructors let their clients get away with murder on this exercise. They get really focused on the back, which is important, especially if somebody's got a back issue, and their arms are coming back and looks good, but because of the angle of the instructor standing to the client, they can't see the front of the shoulder very well. And this really is an excuse because you can see the back of the shoulder and you should be able to tell what's going on with the front by looking at the back. But they let it actually pec minor shorten. And they do it all from like their lats and stuff. And they actually internally rotate the arm bone, that humerus, and then they actually let it roll forward. No, this should be the same bra strap opening as the chest expansion. So for a client that had this kind of issue, I would only let their hands move back and move the carriage out as far as they can keep that bra strap stretched, because otherwise you're trading bad habits. And again, a lot of times the client just doesn't know that they're doing this, so this is where you get to be their eyes and you get to give them feedback and assess and reassess. Do they get what you said? Do they get what you say? And et cetera with that. So those are just some examples, but anything where you can keep the front of the chest really working to open up is going to be fabulous. Here's a super simple one. And again, those of you that have taken lessons from me personally, you probably have heard me yap about this. My mom's probably the one that gets picked on the most with this, and I love her dearly, but she tends to do some of this and has a little bit of a tight pec minor and stuff, but just any of the exercises lying down, so like footwork, feet and straps, you know, that kind of thing, just having your client really feel the back of their shoulders, so their palm all the way up the back of their arm, through the back of their shoulder, across to the other shoulder, and down to the other palm, it's like it's branding a U into the mat. Now, is the exercise about the shoulders? No. I mean, footwork and feet and straps, just as examples I grabbed, are more about, you know, lower body, you know, pelvic stability, all this kind of hip differentiation things. But that's a really great opportunity, especially with a client that kind of gets that stuff. You know, you're warming them up for the day. If they got shoulder issues, this is a very benign, not likely to injure them place to really work on actively opening up the front of the chest by working the upper back of the arms and back of the shoulders and upper back. Okay, so we are not pinching the shoulder blades together. We are just rolling open the front of the shoulders and putting your shoulder blades back on your back, not rolled forward. So those are some thoughts and ideas. And again, it just goes back to cueing good alignment. So again, when they're laying on the reformer, you can look and see if their ear is in line with their center of their shoulder. If you have to put a headrest under it, it's not. Just a little side note in case someone was going to answer that or ask that. And that, again, that's a neck issue, but again, it's throwing that whole complex out. And probably if that's tight, there's probably some pec minor stuff. Okay, just saying. All right, so that was a little bit about the shoulder. And then we have another question that is a different question that is about the shoulder. So I'm just going to go right into this. And she has kind of a two-part question about two specific clients. So we have client one and client two. And she wrote me follow-up email. So I'll read the first original email in its entirety, and then I'll read the follow-up email, and then I'll answer stuff just for clarifying. So this is a great case study. Okay, this question pertains to shoulder issues. I have two clients who, for different reasons, cannot lift their right arm above their head. Client one has just recently had shoulder surgery and a tumor removed from her neck and lymph node, and she's very weak and just trying to get stronger. I'm going to her house and teaching her various chair workouts using TheraBands, small weights, and fitness circle. The doctor said he didn't think she needed physical therapy because a large portion of her shoulder bone has been removed, so it's like there's, quote, nothing there, according to the client. We're focusing on some arm exercises without raising her arms too high, legs, core, abdominals, upper back, and balance exercises. Okay, separate. Client two has gotten, you know, actually, I'm just going to go and read the follow-up on client one. I'll come back to client two just to not be confusing. Okay, so clarification regarding the questions. Client one shoulder issue. The client is in line to have a shoulder replacement surgery now that the tumor has been removed, and her shoulder is hurting more and more, so we're not even touching the bad shoulder. I'm not doing anything with it, just trying to get her stamina and general strength up in other areas so she will be ready for the surgery. Okay, so this is, she just asked for general tips. That's what I would focus on. So if she's having a lot of pain and she's going to have a complete shoulder replacement, which is a very difficult surgery and it's not super common, then I would leave that alone. I wouldn't stick my stick in a hornet's nest and jiggle it around. I would just leave that alone and just make sure you don't hurt it and annoy it anymore. So that's kind of a wrap up on that. Now, in terms of why they didn't think she needed physical therapy, I don't know. A lot of that has to do with what the insurance will cover and things like that. I mean, to me, if there's, quote, nothing there, she needs it more than ever, because there's going to be so much compensation. But that's just my opinion. I'm not a PT, so just a lowly Pilates instructor. All right, so here's client two. Client two has gotten substantially stronger since she started coming to see me 3 months ago. However, the ligaments and muscles in her neck near her upper trap were literally cut through many years ago. She also has a very limited range of motion with the right arm. She can do elephant and long stretch series great. Okay on pulling straps. Other long box exercises that work the back extensors. However, the head of the arm bone juts forward and the shoulder is lower on her right. She looks similar to the first client's, but juts forward more. I'm working to strengthen her mid to upper back and arms, as well as stretch and strengthen her whole body. Both of these ladies are seeing me twice a week. Any tips in shoulders in general would be great. So here's the update. The other client, number two, keeps getting stronger and can do many more things now, including lifting her head, neck, and shoulders for all the flexion exercises, which she could not do at all when she first started. So things at like the 100, I'm guessing. This week, I had her doing the majority of the classical mat exercises, which we thought was very exciting. All that said, I would still love any insights you would like to offer regarding the shoulders in general. Thanks again. I can't tell you enough how glad I am to hear your show and all the great detail on anatomy. Oh, well, you're very welcome. Okay, so for the second client, I think you're doing a great job. It sounds like you are on the right track and you're focusing on the right things. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that the having her upper trap neck muscles kind of literally cut through with some kind of a traumatic accident. So the implications for that, especially if she didn't have surgery and things, I mean, usually it's not completely cut through. It's partially cut. Otherwise, the muscles would retract away from each other and they'd need to be surgically repaired to come back to each other kind of a thing, if that makes sense. But what you need to know is that anytime there's a tearing, whether it's small, meaning from overstretching, like we talked about earlier, with passive stuff where you get sore the next day, all the way to, you know, some kind of crazy accident like this where, you know, some kind of, I don't know, blade went through her or something, there's going to be scar tissue laid down, okay? So that's not a bad thing. It's your friend. Your body is trying to heal itself up. But some work with foam rollers or Yamina balls, if you're familiar with that, might be helpful if you're comfortable with that in terms of as you're working through this, trying to break some of that scar tissue down now that it's in the healing or already, you know, not acute phase. So you're past the acute trauma and it happened a while ago, which it said many years ago in your question. Okay, in terms of a limited range of motion, it sounds like she's got some good range of motion. And like I just talked about, I would really, really ride her and get on her about perfect alignment for some of those things like pulling straps and other exercises that work the upper back and shoulder and arm muscles. Because when you said that the arm bone juts forward, that's exactly what I'm talking about in terms of contributing bad habits. So she's cheating on you. That sounded really weird. She's cheating, and it sounds like you're noticing it, but maybe you're not giving her as much of a spanking about it as she needs. Again, just kidding. Don't actually spank your clients. But you want to make sure that you limit the range of motion enough so that she can do it correctly. Still make it hard for her, don't get me wrong, but she's not training bad habits. Okay, so it sounds like you're right on the right track. I just want to encourage you about that. Now, in terms of getting that range of motion, okay, I am going to go out on a limb. I've been saying that a lot tonight. And say that if you do any kind of a plank position, probably you see this in her long stretch, but even if you just put her on all fours, quadruped position, probably she's got some winging in her scapula. Okay, so her back is not flat. The inside medial edge of her scapula probably comes up off her back. And again, going to guess that probably it's a lot more pronounced on the right side than the left. Okay, now that is a sign of serratus anterior weakness. And again, what we talked about at the beginning of the show is that when the pec minor is really tight, you have this opposing problem of serratus anterior being weak. And this is so huge. And the combination of this is really key to not only putting extra stress on the rotator cuff, possibly causing impingement syndrome, but it causes that pain and pinching and not being able to get your arm over your head syndrome, if you will. So when this is huge. When you're doing exercises, you want to make sure that she starts in a position that's easy, that she can do it without pain, okay? Because if she's feeling pain, she's going to be scared of what she's going to do next, and she's not going to trust you. So we don't want to cause pain. The sneaky way I do this is in the elephant, okay? Now, for me, elephant is about the shoulders. This is my magic place to really get in there and work on people's shoulders, because it's not like some of the really hard shoulder exercises, you know, like snake or something where there are, you know, maybe pull-ups on the chair where they're having to have so much arm and delt strength that they're going to fatigue so quick. They're not in any kind of a weird position, again, like where their core strength is really, you know, worked on like long stretch and things. Elephant, they can sit there for a while. And so what you want to do is sit at the foot bar, or stand at the foot bar rather, and first off get their hair out of the way if they have long hair, and make sure that shoulder blade is upwardly rotated. So get your little hands in there and encourage that upward rotation. Their thumbs need to be by their fingers. No ifs, ands, or buts. If their thumbs are by around the foot bar, they're internally rotating their arm bone and kind of working against you. Okay, so you got to get the thumbs by there. For me, in order to get good wrist alignment, which is not the main focus right now for you, but eventually, you know, will be something that you want to pick on, you want to have them what I call palm the foot bar. So you want to have their fingers squeezing as if they're palming a very little basketball so that their knuckles can start to point down towards the floor. That's going to activate their forearm. It's great for strengthening up and preventing things like carpal tunnel and strengthening their arms for some of the holding on to the overhead work where people are just like, I'm going to drop it. I got to let go, you know, kind of thing. But again, that's not the battle you're picking right now, so you may not want to focus on that. And then here's the magic. This is where you get the cheating. Most people will bend their arms. And they'll, about every 3 seconds after you correct them, they'll bend it again. The other thing they do is they want to have their hands way wider than their shoulders. Okay, now, when you're in pain, I will give them some grace on this. So in order to give them grace, meaning make it easier, I will let them have their hands a little wider than their shoulders to start. I will also let their chest come up higher than I normally would, kind of like you're doing like an osteoporosis kind of straight back elephant, okay? It doesn't have to be a straight back, but their chest is coming up. That way the angle of their arm bone to their body is less. No. Yes. Make sure I said that right. They're upside down. It's all turned around. So meaning their arm is not as overhead. Okay, now here's the beautiful thing on elephant. People that can't bring their arm over their head, this is the first place they can do it. The angle to gravity is your upper body is kind of pressing the glenoid fossa down on the humerus so that it actually allows it to get into place better than if your arms are being held overhead and gravity is working against you. Okay, so this is just a sneaky way to do the same motion as if your arms are holding a stick for short box over your head. Okay? Again, much, much easier position for them. This is the place to work on your alignment for them in the arms over the head position. Get it good. I don't even care if the carriage moves. You can do some of that if you want. It's really missing, it's just challenging them to be able to keep the shoulders, okay? So for her, that's what elephant's going to be about. It's all about the shoulders. So they should have a grapefruit size hole between their shoulder and their ears. None of the shoulder up in their ear stuff is allowed. They need a full upward rotation of the scapula, which you can manually assist them. And you want those elbows straight, thumbs by the fingers, okay? And then as they get stronger at holding their elbows straight, again, this is a weakness issue, they can start to bring their hands closer so that eventually it gets shoulder distance apart. My joke is, all the women, you're not a linebacker. You're really not that wide, I promise. You know, and they all giggle, but, I mean, they're all doing it. It's a cheat to make it easier, okay? So the next thing I would do is I would, you know what? I'm sorry, I didn't even talk about serratus. So the serratus here, what it's doing is you have your hands fixed on the foot bar, meaning the foot bar is not going to move on you. So you've got a closed chain there. And if you, with your thumbs by your fingers, think of pulling the foot bar apart. What that's going to do, because your hands aren't going to move, that thing's nice and sticky, is it's going to cause your serratus anterior to turn on and pull your shoulder blades apart. So they're going to protract, okay? And this is huge in terms of getting the serratus anterior to turn on. And again, that serratus being strong is going to be huge in terms of getting your shoulder blade back on your back and your pec minor open. Okay, so we already talked about some ways to actively open pec minor earlier in this show, which I'm sure you heard. Those would all be awesome with this client as well. But this is a sneaky way to get the strength to start opposing that and really work on that. Okay, so other back extensors and stuff would be excellent. You know, triceps and all that kind of thing are great. Posterior delts and stuff, that'd be great. But again, make sure that when they do that kind of work, like I talked about with pulling straps, that they don't let the head of the arm bone jump forward, which you called it perfectly. You saw it already, but that's what tends to want to happen. Back them up and keep the range in a good place. Okay, so those are some thoughts. Try that stuff out. See how it goes. And if and when she's ready, the next level, and this may take a while, okay, because you're not going to be spending the whole time doing the elephant. Unfortunately, they can't handle that. They'll get really tired. And if you're doing this correctly where you're pulling the foot bar apart, even like a pretty strong person, they'll start shaking. The serratus will get so tired and everything. It's actually quite hard. When she can do that, then what you're going to advance her to is doing that against gravity. Okay, so we're not putting any resistance in there. We're just flipping her upside down. So you can have her sit on the short box. You can have her sit on a chair. It doesn't really matter. You can combine this with some flat back short box abs. But what you're doing is holding that bar. So it's just like the foot bar, thumb by the fingers, hands are shoulder width, trying to get the elbows straight, trying eventually, like in the elephant, to work them towards where their arms are in line with their ears. Again, that's where I give them some grace. Let it be in front of their head and let their hands be wide to start. But really try to work on those elbows straight. That's my first thing I get picky on. And then work on pulling that bar apart, like you're trying to stretch the wind bar, which obviously wood does not stretch. That would be a totally weird thing. But and no, usually people ask me, no, you don't want to do this with a TheraBand because the TheraBand does stretch, which changes the dynamic on the serratus. And then you have the arms moving instead of the arms being fixed and the serratus causing the movement to happen at the shoulder blade. So we don't want to do this with a TheraBand. It's not going to hurt you or anything, but you're not going to get quite the same movement coming from it. You can do this if you don't have a bar or something. You can do it with a hand towel, although that demands that your hands are usually about shoulder width just from the length of the hand towel, unless you have really long hand towels, which would be cool. But you could do it with a yoga strap. That would work well, things like that. There are special devices. What are they called? I believe Kathy Corey has a, is it core band? I don't remember. But you put your hands in these slots. And it's like a heavy canvas that gives you that pulling apart feel that you can do overhead with it. Fletcher's got their towel thing. They do the same kind of thing. But, again, all of it's really going to get that upward rotation of the serratus anterior working like crazy. Okay, so try that stuff with her. Get back to me. See if you have any follow-up questions on that. I think it's awesome that she's getting stronger. I will be quite frank, the classical mat exercises do not have much strengthening for the shoulders. So it's not going to really tax her, which in some ways is going to be awesome because then she can work on other stuff. Like that's really great that the front of her head and neck, shoulders and stuff is getting stronger, that she can do that head and shoulder off the mat stuff. That's really great. But at the same time, you're going to have to be really intentional if you're doing just mat work, which I don't think you are because of the other stuff you said you're doing with her. But just in general, the mat work is not very shoulder dominant. So these kinds of things you can add to it and get some fun aspects. And again, if you're not moving on the elephant, you can kind of jimmy rig a bar up, you know, at, you know, to get the same feel and stuff, if that makes sense. Okay, so let me know if that stuff makes sense. I got a couple other questions I'm going to try to squeeze in here before we run out of time for tonight. Okay. My question to you is if you can recommend a good online source for getting CECs. I looked on the PMA website, and there are a few choices, and I'm not a Pilates Anytime member anymore. I have 15 credits, and I need one more to keep my PMA certification. Thank you. Okay, well, that's kind of tricky. PMA website would be good. You can buy some stuff that you can do online. Pilates Anytime does have some stuff that you can buy, which I think they have some really great options and things. If you just need one more credit, I would just go to your certification for CPR, which I think they don't require anymore. Don't quote me on that. But you can still use that because I know I did last time. So that's a nice one. And to me, reminding yourself about the CPR stuff is always a great thing. I don't know. I've got 5 kids, and I think that if something ever happened, I want to be ready. You know, and if something happened to the studio, oh, goodness, you want to be ready to jump in there. So I think that's always a great one. I will use this opportunity to shamelessly plug our upcoming programs. Now, I don't know if PMA would take anything from the P3 program. I think it probably would because it's not a basic training program. I don't think they would give you credit for all the many hours that you're going to use with the P3 program, meaning you guys get so many hours of videos. They're not going to give you credit for all that, but you could definitely get one. So what they do is they have a petition application, and there is some nominal fees, like $15 or something, and you just fill it out. You do need like an outline of the course, and you need, some hour by hour of what you did and things like that, which your instructor can fill out for you. And I'd be more than happy if you guys want to petition for some of that to do that. That would be fine. I haven't had anyone do that yet, but I don't see why you couldn't. I think a lot of the time when people are going through P3, they are not PMA certified yet, and so it's not an issue to get CECs for it. So we haven't really had that come up, but I don't see why you couldn't. On the other hand, we are working on our P3 Level 2, which I am super excited about, and I've got we are going to be starting on some of the taping of those sessions and lectures and everything very soon in the next couple of months, and I'm getting all that ready. So I just want to let you know we are hoping, well, I'm going to go out and say hopefully it'll be done by the end of this year. That's huge. So hopefully I didn't just shoot myself in the foot and give us deadlines that we're not going to meet, but I really think we will. We are also working on a pregnancy course, so really in-depth, exploring all aspects of pregnancy. And as you know, this is one of my specialties, and I have a little experience with pregnancy. We're going to have some great pregnant footage for you and all sorts of great resources for you with that. So those both would be things that you could get CECs for, but that doesn't help you right now, does it? So I do want to mention some of those other things and just encourage you to make sure you do keep it up, because I did have one instructor that let hers lapse and actually had to retake the test because of it. So she passed it again, obviously. She's awesome. But she, you don't want to spend that money and make yourself stress and stuff about that again. So hopefully that helps you. And if you have other questions in the future, let me know. And I think I still have time for one more, just a few more. This is a quick one. She wrote, "Good afternoon, Katrina. I watched your lecture that said I am not technically certified after passing the Balanced Body Comprehensive Test out. I'm working to word my status correctly on my business cards. I looked at the Balanced Body Instructor Directory, which I just saw that I'm listed on. Yay! And they say we are Balanced Body Education graduates. Can I call myself a graduate of Balanced Body's comprehensive program? It's so much easier, even though it's not accurate, to say I'm Balanced Body comprehensively certified. Thanks. I totally agree with you. It's the word certification has a lot of, just officialness to it. It's probably not a word, but you know what I'm saying. And graduate doesn't really bring that. I really, really want to commend you, and I admire the fact that you care and want to word it correctly on your business card. Yes, Balanced Body graduate. You could, you know, put any aspect of that: Balanced Body Education graduate, Balanced Body Comprehensive Program graduate, anything like that would be awesome. You could say stuff about completing the P3 program if you wanted. When you're, you know, done with that, I think looking at this person, I think you are done. But technically, you're not actually certified until you take the Pilates Method Alliance test. And that has changed, and I will say that there are a lot of unethical people out there saying they're Balanced Body certified. I've seen people that say it that I know for a fact have only done a mat test out. It just makes me cringe. But you know what? Bottom line is most people, most regular clients aren't going to know the difference on all this stuff, and what's going to really help you is that you teach great. And so all the work that you are doing, going through all your comprehensive certification and test out and all the P3 program, is going to pay you back immensely, because you're going to rock and they're going to see that and they're going to get results. And so that's where the proof. It's in the pudding. All right, so I'm going to wrap up with that tonight, and I hope you guys got some good nuggets out of all that shoulder talk and then a couple of random questions at the end. If you have questions, don't forget to email them to me, because if you have that question, probably someone else does too. I have not seen any stupid questions yet. There's only stupid answers, right? That would come from my part. So I want you guys to all remember that everybody deserves to enjoy movement, and you are the ones to help them experience that. Have a great night.